My name is Fritz Springmeier, and this is going to be the second segment of five segments of presentations here put on under the auspices of the Prague Peace Award. This is the Great Lucerna Hall in beautiful Prague. And we have a lot to be grateful for, a lot to be thankful for in life. And so every day we want to give thanks for life, right? We want to have joy. There's many things in life that could steal our joy. There are many things in life that would come along to steal our hope. But this is where God in our life is so important. And so in the first segment, I talked about the power of faith. I talked about the power of love. And when I get started on this talk, the title, as you see, is Peril and Opportunity. My job assignment, as I was given from Heavenly Father, our Creator, was not just to expose evil, but to give hope. So I have this balancing here. So when I expose darkness, I need to give light, I need to give hope, joy, faith. So that's this presentation here will be some balance there to it. And I'm going to discuss the power of love with you to start with. And maybe, you know, you have been inspired. Remember, in the first segment, I talked about how God inspired David to stand up to Goliath and do something incredible. Maybe you have been inspired to do something that amazed you. I know it's happened in my life where I look back and I go, I did that? Wow. Well, I'm going to give you an example of one of those times. I had a Christian brother, and this man was exceptional in that he was able to exude love. I think through my life, and I can't think of hardly anyone else that could just generate love on such a high level as this man. And I was on the basketball court just throwing some basketballs. And this brother came, and I sensed his love. And it inspired me, it elevated me up. This was nothing planned, it just happened. It was so inspiring to be in the presence of this love. And it's what the Sufis and many other mystics have talked about, this zone, this white light or whatever. I entered the zone. And I was able to go, and I shot 60 baskets without missing. No matter where I went on that half of the basketball court and shot, I made a basket. I really got to see that day how love can empower us. You have the power to empower other people. You can give them that love to elevate them. Maybe that person there is having a bad day, and just a hug or a kind word will make their day and turn it around. On the opposite side, when we live in the negative emotions, that the enemy feeds off of, those break our bodies down. They deteriorate the level of proficiency we can do when we do things. So the title of this talk is Peril and Opportunity. I have noticed in working with people that were survivors of the Illuminati's trauma-based mind control, that no matter how much torture, no matter how much mind control, there is a spirit in man that can't be broken. That spirit is put there by God. So the spirit of man never gives up on freedom, no matter how hard they are repressed. I want to visit Rosenstrasse in Berlin next on my trip here to Europe. And Rosenstrasse is very special. What happened there? Maybe you know. If you don't, I'm going to tell you. Right after the Battle of Stalingrad, which was the first major defeat for the German armed forces in Russia, the Gestapo and the SS decided to round up the last batch of Jews in Berlin. Now, these Jews are like so many people in the system that we have today. That is, they think, if I do whatever the system, the world system wants, and I keep my nose clean, I'm safe. These Jews were working in the fabrics. That's why it was called Fabrik Auction. In other words, they went into the factories. These Jews were helping Germany's war effort. They thought they were safe. And they pulled them out of the factories to send them to Auschwitz. And there was a spontaneous revolt by the women in Berlin. Thousands of them. Some of them were the wives of these Jews that were rounded up. But some of them were just people that didn't like what was happening. And they gathered here at this site, which now has a memorial. And they started yelling, "Gebt uns unsere Männer wieder! Give us our men back!" And they were screaming. And so the SS would come out with tripod machine guns every now and then. And the women, the thousand or so women that were there in spontaneous protest, would run away, scurry away like mice. And then a couple minutes later, when it was safe, they would come back and start screaming again. And that whole area of Berlin could hear them. And the Nazi authorities had never anticipated that the people would rise up like that. And in the end, after a number of days, they gave in. They even brought back some of the Jews that had already been sent to the concentration camps. They even went to the concentration camps, brought them back, and released them with all the rest. And so here is an example of the people saying, you know what? We're not going to take this. We are going to spontaneously say, no, enough is enough. This kind of thing has happened in other countries. It's happened in Argentina. There's some remarkable incidences in Argentina where people have been arrested under tyranny and ended up getting released too. So the spirit of man never gives up on freedom, no matter how hard they are repressed. It was important for me to find moments in history where people had joy, and where I wanted to take those moments and share them with other people. And I was surprised as I went through history and I looked, where can you find people that have, you know, joy, just like the love I was describing earlier. And I was surprised. The place in history where I found people having the most joy were with the black slaves who sang what were called Negro spirituals. And as they worked, they would sing with joy and hope. And the lyrics, the words of the songs, were from the Bible, but they were stories like how Moses had freed the slaves from Egypt, meaning that one day they would be free too. And so that's a very encouraging example from history. And this woman, Harriet Tubman, she freed many slaves. And so I quote from her, "I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew they were slaves. Now, the slaves back then were not under mind control. Today, we have millions of people that have been subjected to trauma-based mind control. They don't even know they're slaves because they're under this mind control. But even back then, when the slaves weren't under mind control, they didn't know that they were slaves. Now here, on the right-hand side, are two of my books exposing the trauma-based mind control. The one on the top, on the right, has a very long title. I was old-fashioned, and the old-fashioned books used to have long titles, and I didn't want to leave out any word. It's Illuminati formula used to create an undetectable total mind control slave. And I should have just given it the title, The Formula Book, and kept the rest as a subtitle. I have not gotten around to doing that yet. And it had a sequel. The first book was 500 pages. The second book was 600 pages, and it's Deeper Insights. And the second half of Deeper Insights gives the therapeutic issues that people that have been subjected to trauma-based mind control face, and solutions to those issues. So I have worked very hard to liberate these people and to provide solutions for them. And if you are interested in this kind of work or understanding this subject better, my books are available on my website, pentrax.com, pentracks.com, pentrax.com. And I have designed my talks today not to be repetitive with things that I have given in the past, because if I can direct you to my books or other people's books that say the same thing, if I can direct you to videos that will also explain these, then I will. Just like yesterday, our speaker up here on the stage was David Icke, and he gave a long, good presentation where he step-by-step showed people how the politically correct reality is not reality, how it's a pseudo-reality built to enslave us. And so there's an example of something that somebody can watch, and so I don't need to cover that ground. And likewise, there'll be some other things I will share with you that instead of covering ground, I will just show you where to go for more, for the information. All of these men up above, these are people that were, arrested for mass shootings in Aurora, Colorado. There was a theater. The man on the left-hand side there, all of these men were victims of trauma-based mind control, and they have a Delta-type programming. The programming is coded Alpha, Beta, Delta, Gamma, Epsilon, and my books here, as you see again, the covers, they go into those different types of programming, 40 pages of codes in each of the books, and breaking down in extreme detail how the mind control is done. This mind control incorporates every known method of mind control that there is, and includes even now some that we don't know about, into a sophisticated package. It is the sophisticated package that makes it so powerful. Because let's say this type of mind control only works 60% of the time, there may be three or four other types of mind control active at the same time that will work. So the victim is locked into the control no matter what. And down on the bottom, you see beta programming. They make sexual slaves. And many people have come to me and told me that they appreciated me exposing this. I had the privilege of being the first person to expose this type of mind control publicly. And I started doing that in 1991. And as you see, these are two of the three books that I wrote. One is now out of print. And many survivors of this mind control have thanked me. I have worked with many of them. I have met countless victims, survivors of this type of mind control. And it works off of dissociation and what I would like to call multiple personality disorder. And so, like I say, down in the bottom you see some examples there of the mind control in action, the sexual slaves. And so, this gentleman here, who was very critical back in the 1920s for creating more of a mass methods of controlling the thinking of people, said, if we understand the mechanism and motives of the group mind, it is now possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without them knowing it. Now, this was said back many years ago, almost a century ago. So imagine if they were already able to do it back then, where their capabilities are. Trauma-based mind control, it's been done by many different groups. My books expose the many, many different groups that do it. There are some Christian organizations that are fronts. And when you go in to do the deprogramming, you discover that there are four different types of programming that are distinctive to a particular set of religious group. The Jesuits have some Jesuit trauma-based mind control programs. The Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses, and in the fourth group are the charismatics. And the code words and programs, a lot of times are tailored to their religions so that people can be controlled while they're involved with religious activities of these organizations. This trauma-based mind control, which was done by the CIA, went under the title of MK Ultra, and there were actually some people within the CIA that were horrified of this, and they worked to help declassify documents so that the public could realize better what was happening. So there are now several thousand declassified documents and so these are declassified documents here that have been redacted with markings, but we still have enough that the paper trail is there. The head of the CIA, Stan Turner, had to testify in front of Congress back in 1977 about the trauma-based mind control and the MKUltra. And so this is not conspiracy theory, this is history. And there's so much I could say about this, but since I have talked about this at length in many radio interviews and some shows on YouTube and my books, I'm not going to go into deep depth about this, because the investigator, those that are interested, can find the information in other places. Just quickly here, I, after working with this for years, decided that the title, the name trauma-based, is maybe not as descriptive as saying it's fear-based. The traumas are done to create fear. And so down on the lower left is some artwork done by one of the women that had been in the Illuminati that was working on her trauma-based mind control. It showed how the programming was being experienced by her mind. And here is a picture showing one of the programs that they had done for her deeper parts of her mind, where they had dehumanized her and they had done hypnotic surgery during the programming to make her think, make those parts think that they did not have a heart. So sometimes people think, okay, what these people need is Jesus or God. These parts don't have a heart. They don't see themselves as human. And they need to regain their humanness before they can even move forward spiritually. They have lots of programming to keep them away from God, to keep them away from Christ. And so the other two things on the upper left and the lower right, you see two pages here from my Deeper Insights book, where I show, you know, for instance, this one, which is closest, you know, the child who's placed by the Illuminati in a situation where he's helpless, this experience of helplessness creates certain dynamics in the mind, and then it creates certain visible clues that are visible and that are internal. And so for the person that is going to try to identify this stuff, you need to look at the very subtle clues. You know, they may have sleeping problems. They may have eating disorders. Typically, the trauma-based mind control is misdiagnosed because the therapeutic community out there, the psychiatrists and psychologists, are in general dirty. During the early 90s, when I began exposing this, there were several hundred therapists in the United States that were very concerned about this trauma-based mind control. And we had a number of conferences. I was at a number of conferences where there were like a couple hundred therapists that had clients that were suffering from this. And I watched during the 1990s, the world system, one by one, destroyed the practices of these psychologists. And very amazing how they did that. I may just relate that, I don't want to drag this on too long. I want this to fit approximately an hour and a half on this segment. But we had there in Portland someone who was treating patients that had the trauma-based mind control. So she got a patient in that was Illuminati, that was there to help destroy her career. And this is all connected to the false memory syndrome people. And so she claimed that the therapist had planted false memories in her and sued this good, legitimate therapist. And of course, none of this happened. There were no memories implanted. It was all just a ruse. It was lies. But when they went to court, what the judge did, and again, this was a dirty judge, the judge put a gag order on this. He said, neither side can talk about this case. So in other words, the psychologist that was being sued was not allowed by the judge to talk about the case to anyone but her attorney. But the other side was also had the gag order, but what did the other side do? The other side went to the press, and in our major paper for Portland, which is called the Oregonian. On the front page, they did yellow journalism story where they made this psychologist look totally bad. Just ripped into her with lots of slander, but she couldn't defend herself because she had a gag order. So I have watched them take the legitimate therapist down. So now there's exceptionally few people out there to help these people. And during the course of a normal week, I will have several of them begging me to help them. And of course, I am not in a position to help the hundreds of people out there that are suffering from this, that are just begging for someone to help them. And the first thing they need is a safe place, which is the last thing that I can give them. We need safe places. There's actually, I came to learn that one group has actually created a safe place. I won't say anything more because, you know, but there are some people recognizing that this is a major problem and are trying to help. The upper right corner picture was also artwork. This was Cisco's artwork, one of her ultra personalities. There was some of them that had been severely traumatized, and they received fire tortures and then hypnotically given a porcelain mask to cover their face. So they had been severely dehumanized. So that's how they saw them. That's how one of them saw herself. All of these people are very famous worldwide. Ted Bundy was a serial murderer, and he raped many women. He was from an Illuminati home, and he had this trauma. He was a victim of this trauma-based mind control. Charlie Manson, he was not only a victim of this, but he worked with the CIA. He had a satanic cult, and the women in his cult were involved in murders, like Sharon Tate. And all of these people, like I say, were programmed multiple personalities. The Son of Sam there. And then John W. Hinckley Jr., he was involved with the attempt on Reagan's life. What's very interesting is the Hinckley family is very close to the Bush family. The Bush family and the Hinckley family are very close together. The Bush family is Illuminati. I don't know, that's why I wrote Illuminati Connected. I don't know if the Hinckley family are members, but I would suspect that they are as close as they are to the Bush family. But all of that connections between John Hinckley, who used to go over to George Bush's house frequently, and their families are interrelated, their children and so forth. You heard nothing of that in the press when this incident with Reagan being shot at occurred. And then there's Patty Hearst. She's from the Illuminati family and also a victim of the trauma-based mind control. And so all these people had multiple personality disorder. My work has been to give hope to the victims. One of the victims of trauma wrote, you know my name, not my story. You see my smile, not my pain. You notice my cuts, not my scars. You can read my lips, not my mouth. You know, there's a lot of people that are suffering, and maybe some in the audience, maybe some of the people that will view this video. It's sad, you know, I feel their suffering. When I worked with the victims of the trauma-based mind control, at sometimes I have to break down because what has happened to them is so horrific. This is Illuminati member here, Brzezinski, a very well-known quote. Shortly, the people will be unable to reason or think for themselves. They'll only be able to parrot the information that had been given on the previous night's news. These people, some of these people that I've interacted with, Illuminati kingpins, have openly bragged about some of this stuff. Very similar to Brzezinski's quote here. They verge on the sense of feeling invincible, very cocky, that they are sure that they are in control. And so here is the control mechanism diagrammed out. Both of these diagrams are very popular. The one in the upper right has been copied hundreds, if not thousands, of places in people's books and on the internet. You will see it very frequently. It was even in, like David Icke used it in at least one of his books. Generally, when it's used, they leave off the fact that it says copyright Fritz Springmeier there, and a lot of times people have no idea where it came from. But it shows that there are different levels there, and within the Illuminati hierarchy, there's an anarchy level, a hierarchy level, and then there are councils above that. And this type of organization is replicated in different ways, and it also relates to the mechanism for control. And so even though I have explained the diagram over here on the lower right, and I've explained this over the years many times, I'm going to explain it again because it's so critical to understand the control mechanism. I was reading a Gnostic tome, one of these books that probably gets read once every 100 years, dusty tome. I don't even remember the title of it. And I was like in the middle of this boring, dusty Gnostic book. And all of a sudden, the light went on when I read a paragraph. And I realized they just told me in this esoteric language how the control is done. The control works off of three mechanisms. First, they say that they have hidden knowledge. Now, knowledge is power. So if I say I have hidden knowledge, I have secrets, I have this knowledge that will give you all this wisdom and power, what does that do for me? I create an instant power base, and you are now dependent on coming to me to get that information. So the first part of this whole control mechanism is making you dependent on receiving my hidden knowledge. And that can be given out in many different ways. For instance, and the way that they do that can be very subtle. For instance, the Watchtower Society, which a number of my books link to the Illuminati as Illuminati Front. In the Jehovah's Witnesses Watchtower Society's material, they say, you must stay in touch with the Mother of God. Well, the Mother of God is the Watchtower Society. And you must stay in touch, read our material. They put out a Watchtower magazine twice a month, and in between that, they put out an Awake. And to stay in touch with God, you have to read their material, which is a very low-grade but effective form of mind control. But so they're making you dependent, and they're dishing that out periodically in a time fashion. That's how they're dishing it out. But if you would go to Freemasonry, how do they dispense this hidden knowledge? They dispense it by you pay like $100 for each degree, or 110. It's varied in various countries and in various lodge systems how much you have to pay for each degree, but I'm just giving you an approximate figure there, maybe 110, might be even more now, that you pay for this degree. And then that, when you take that degree and you're initiated, they are going to give you their hidden knowledge of that degree. They are making you dependent upon them, and then they are giving that out in increments. That's the second thing. The second part of this is to dispense the hidden knowledge in increments so that you make the person dependent on them. And then the third part of this control mechanism is you divide things into three general categories. You have information or a level of understanding for the masses, and then you have initiates. Now, like within the Watchtower Society, the common Jehovah's Witnesses of the great crowd, he's told that he's not going to inherit heaven. He's told that the Bible wasn't written to him, and that he can't receive the Holy Spirit. So he's stripped, he's prohibited from gaining access to those things, so he's dependent upon the Watchtower Society. And then there are initiates, which is the anointed. And then you have cover ruling bodies, which in the case of the Jehovah's Witnesses are the governing body. But this template here, if I took the time, I could go through many, many different organizations and show you how this template is used repeatedly with many different fraternal organizations and many religions. And sometimes, like in CUT, Church Universal Triumphant, they will subdivide a particular section. So like the lower third, which is for the common masses, they might subdivide that in 5 or 10 subdivisions. But this general pattern, remarkably, once I caught on to this, I saw this template being used repeatedly. Now let's look at the Catholic Church, right? At the bottom you have the laity, right? And then above that you have the clergy. And then above that you have your ruling groups, the cardinals, right? People, these councils in the Vatican. And then I discovered that the cover ruling body was oftentimes placed there to mislead you as to who was actually running things. The cover ruling body was just that. It was to fool you. Oh, okay, the cardinals in the Catholic Church are not really running things. Somebody else, there's some string pullers. So like in the Jehovah's Witnesses, they had and I don't know if he was a Freemason. Some people think he may have been a Freemason. But when I wrote my Be Wise as Serpents book in 1991, the president of the Watchtower Society was Freddie Franz. He was 99 years old. He was bedridden. So when their organization needed to know what to do and needed a decision from Freddie Franz, who was a 99-year-old man, almost ready to die, he's died since. They would send in this Iraqi Jew, Nathir Salih, and Nathir Salih would go into the room and come back. And he, you know, he had a cold jewelry on his finger. He would come back with the answer. So there you see that there are secret, hidden string pullers. And my investigation showed that the key string pullers all in there are Illuminati Satanists or Luciferians. So if you think of each of these pyramids as a different religion or fraternal group, you have many different pieces of the pie. And remember that principle, divide and conquer. This is the most perfect control mechanism, because the people out here, because all of these divisions, you have the Jehovah's Witness fighting the Catholic down here. They never rebel against the control. The control's coming from here, right? From the center. But they're not going to rebel. But let's say, for some strange reason, at the bottom here of the pyramid, that some Jehovah's Witnesses would want to rebel against their hierarchy. And actually, to tell you, in working with Jehovah's Witnesses, which I did for many years, I would ask them if they knew who was the president of Watchtower Society, and they were afraid. It was like asking someone in Stalinist Russia a question, you know. Some of them were actually afraid to even know who was running it. And sometimes they would say, no, I have no idea. I was rather shocked. But anyway, let's say someone at the bottom, by some strange quirk of fate, would decide to rebel against the sinner. The priest category here is the buffer zone to protect the Luciferian hierarchy in the middle. So they keep everybody on the outer fringe distracted, fighting each other. The Mormon is fighting the Jehovah's Witness, fighting the Catholic, fighting the Protestant, fighting the Masons. Out here, it's the perfect divide and conquer control mechanism. So this is the template for how they are doing it, and it's all based on knowledge is power and using that power, even if they don't have it. If I say I have hidden mysteries, I have secrets, you don't know what I have, so you don't even know whether I'm truthful or not. You know, I might not even have anything for real, but I create the instant power base by saying I have that. And so as you go up the degree system, like in Freemasonry, they redefine terms. So if you know the square and compass of Freemasonry, when you start out at the bottom in the Blue Lodge, which most Masons stay down here, this is the Blue Lodge, and then the next level is the Red Lodge, and then above that is the Council of the 33rd Degree, Supreme Council of 33rd Degree. You are told when you begin, the G in the square and the compass stands for God. And then as you go up, you're told, no, it actually, the secret meaning is gnosis, the secret knowledge. And if you get up higher, it stands for the Genetri principle, which means buggering little boys, you know, the reproductive sexuality that gets perverted and supposedly gives you spiritual power. So, understanding the control mechanism of the world, I have many diagrams where I diagram it out. I know in detail how they have it structured, so I've over the years tried to put together some diagrams to help people understand this. This diagram down here at the bottom shows that in P2 Freemasonry, the Triads, the Mishpucha, which is Jewish Mafia, the regular Mafias, all these groups, there will be some key families in those groups that are actually Illuminati. All of the families within those groups aren't, but there will be key groups. So like the Li family, which is a Chinese Illuminati family, has played a big role in the Triads. In fact, to give you an example of the level of accuracy that my Bloodlines of the Illuminati book, which goes in and exposes all these Illuminati bloodlines, there's many of them, but they picked 13 to be prominent, and then recently they have narrowed it down to 7 are very prominent. They switched up after 2009. They had a meeting in Gstaad, Switzerland, where the things switched over to a new set of the youngsters who took control, and things got rearranged. So it's now 7 families that are prominent versus 13 We will get into numerology later in a later talk, but here up on the upper left, I diagram out how they, that was, now I could add more to it. It's how they're controlling the grain and food. That's very critical. You will notice Cargo and some of these other companies are worldwide and have, and Monsanto, you know, a lot of power. You know, I mentioned the Club of Rome there, and all of these many, many organizations that they've set up and many methods, and I try to explain that in some of my lectures or in my diagrams. And so going back to what I was talking about, the triads, as you may know, I was set up and given 8 years in federal prison. And so by some, the head of the San Francisco triads actually asked to be my cellmate. So it wasn't by chance. I can't say it was by chance because he requested to become my cellmate. And when this leader of the triads for San Francisco came to my room, I happened to have a copy of my Bloodlines of the Illuminati book. And so I decided I would test the waters. I took the chapter on the Lee family, which has a number of pages showing the connection between the Lee family and how the triads work and so forth. And I said, would you read this chapter and would you give me some feedback on it if there's anything wrong with this chapter? And he read it. And when he was finished reading, his eyes were big. And I said, well, did you find anything wrong? And he just looked like a deer in the headlights, sort of shocked. He didn't say anything. He just handed the book back. So I know that the things I'm telling about, you know, I've verified them. I'm not afraid of the Illuminati, the hidden hand. What I am afraid of is that I would give you something that was not accurate, that was not truthful. So I can affirm to you that I want to tell you the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And I've worked hard during the last 30 years to do that. And as I'm giving my presentations today, I'm talking off the top of my head. Maybe that I may remember a fact or something, or say something that I didn't mean to say. It slips out wrong. But believe me, my heart is to give you only what is truthful. And that's why, like when I was talking about the threat of Nibiru and Planet 9, I can verify to you that there's a Planet 9. But what the likelihood of it coming and causing major destruction to this planet, my opinion or my estimation or evaluation is that it's not likely. But again, we need to understand that there are many different possible things that could happen, and it can't be ruled out. And so it's definitely something that might come into play. Even if it doesn't, in the coming next few years, we are going to be facing a lot of perils. And that's why I called this talk Opportunity and Peril. It says in the Word of God, all All things work I started to give a different verse. All things work together for good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose, which is Romans 8:28. I have literally, accurately verified that by what's happened in my life. And the fact that I stand here before you shows you that walking in faith, things will work to good no matter what. They put me in prison, and I'm very grateful that I was in prison. Many good things happened because of that. And, it cramped my style. It's not comfortable to be in prison. But I learned some things, and I saw some things in there. And again, this goes back to giving you hope and telling you practical solutions. You see, we need to grab the time. If we don't grab a hold of our life and the time, we need to grab a hold of our life now. Now, right now, is the only time that you can communicate with God. Not in the past, not in the future, now. Now is the time to seize. Seize your time. You take control of your life. If you don't take control of your life, it's going to take control of you and just beat you up. And so this is what happens to men. Now I'll give you an example. Martha Stewart, they said that she had done insider trading. Martha Stewart is rather a prominent person. You may have heard of her. She was given 3 months in a camp, a woman's camp. That is about the easiest prison sentence you could experience. 3 months in a camp. The camp is the very easiest type of prison. And she totally fell apart. I saw many other people like her. These people that have always gotten their way their entire life. They've never had any difficulty. They've never struggled. And they come to prison and they totally fall apart. What is lacking there? Something that we all need to grab a hold of, and that is we need to grab a hold of the time. They threw me in the hole I was in the hole like 8 months, right? And I had to talk other people out of suicide that were thrown into the hole. I thrived in there. I thrived, but how did I thrive? It's because my mind seized the time and I made good use of the time. And one of the things that they try to tell you in prison, they try to communicate to the inmate when you go to prison, we have taken away all your decisions. We now make the decisions for you. No. The inmate has many decisions. I continued to do my work while I was in prison. I have 6 copies a book that was co-authored while I was in prison that's translated into Czech. And I'm hoping that Alexandra can find some good homes for that. They're almost collector's items. Not very many of them have been produced. And that's, I think, the value of the book more than anything else is just for someone who wants to have it as a collector's item. But I was able to continue working because I did not allow them to steal my life and make me believe that they now controlled me. No, I don't care who you are, whether you're a slave or whatever you are, you can still take control, you can still make decisions. And all those people that I know that escaped the Illuminati, they did exactly that. So you have over here, I have right here, Islam, Judaism, Roman Catholicism, Protestantism. And those are open religions. Their meetings, the mosques, the synagogues, churches, they're open. Behind them are semi-secret groups, Freemasonry, Jesuits, Sufism. And behind those, so you have layers of onions, like the layer of onion, it gets secret, more secret and more secret, till you get to the heart of the Luciferian Illuminati. All of us have needs, and what the Illuminati have done is very skillfully identified what those needs are and taken advantage of them. So if we look how the universe functions, it functions off of love, it functions off of truth, it functions off of justice. These are the things that sustain all the elements of the universe. They're actually the attributes of God sustain the universe. And so these are tweaked, they're manipulated, and they are turned into systems of control. This was not only given to me by divine revelation, but it was given to someone else by divine revelation, but it was also given to a man who was a banker, Dodd. And he realized at a certain point in his life, he was a New York banker, that he didn't want to be part of this whole cabal, this elite cabal. And he realized that this is how they were controlling people. And he showed this to someone who was a bigger insider than him. And the insider said, and he asked, "Isn't this what they're doing?" And he says, "Hey, if I answered your question, I'd have to kill you." So I know that, through various ways of confirmation, this diagram here, which is a double pyramid, there are certain intrinsic attributes to a pyramid. The top controls the base. There's a lot involved here, and this one diagram could be maybe a whole day of lecture. And this is my Be Wise as Serpents book cover, where I break down the systems of control. And this policy process, the Order of the Quest is the Illuminati group that they are assigned to carry forth the plans from one generation to another. You have 40, 20, 10-year, 5-year plans that they make. The mafia do the same thing. They make 20-year plans, 10-year plan, 5-year plan. Very similar to like when the communist regimes were in full swing, they would do this kind of planning. And so the Order of the Quest has things that are on the agenda that are planned. And this policy process here, this is the basic U.S. policy process, but it's replicated in all the different countries. And in the United States, this policy process takes about 20 years. They decide what they want to do, and then they have different policy planning groups study it. They come up with big, thick books that, after doing many years and lots of study, they already know at the beginning what the end result is going to be. But, I mean, they make it sound like they're studying this out. And then they provide that research to people in lawmaking who then say, this has been studied and this is what their conclusions are, and this is the best course of action. So it's a very extensive policy process. I know the different organizations involved. So here I have given some policy planning groups in the different nations. In Russia, the CFDP, the East-West Institute, the Carnegie Moscow Center. And what's amazing is some of the people in these heading these Russian groups, they worked for NATO, they worked for Western policy planning groups, like maybe the Trilateral Commission and so forth. And so we look at what's going on in Putin's Russia and we think, oh, well, this has nothing to do with the Illuminati because he badmouths the Illuminati and he says he wants to fight the Illuminati and Putin talks a good story. And I do appreciate Putin for being a nationalist. I would rather see someone who's a nationalist like Putin or Trump, Trump's a nationalist also, than somebody who's a globalist like Hillary. But the bottom line is as one Illuminati grandmaster said, the whole world's a stage. And these things are very carefully scripted out. So even nationalists like Adolf Hitler or Trump or Putin, they are skillfully worked into the script. And so here in the Czech Republic, we have the Europeum and the IIR, and then you can see some of for the other countries. In the UK, it's the Royal Institute of International Affairs. In the United States, the primary one that I listed was Council for Foreign Relations, but there are many others involved. And so just making you aware that there, I know in detail the methodology of their of how they work, how they implement their plans, and it's done globally. And here are some of the European alumni ritual sites which I've exposed. Castles. Wewelsburg Castle was the center point of the SS occult religion. And there you see the Black Sun logo over there that's on the floor of Wewelsburg Castle. And there have been some high-level rituals done there. Also, some like one of the women who I've helped with the trauma-based mind control was there in Luciferian ceremony. And these castles, like the Chateau de Saint-Moroy, Mother of Darkness Castle, there's a large story of how I exposed that and how that got was part of the big Dutro scandal that almost brought down the Belgian government. And since I have discussed this in other radio interviews, I will, for the sake of speed, just refer you to maybe listen to some of my other interviews where I discuss this castle. And I also write some about it in some of my books. The Church of San Lorenzo, which is near Rome. This ancient church here is the center of the Vatican Satanic Coven rituals, where they do them. So I have one book where I expose hundreds of ritual sites and have hundreds of covens in the United States. And I don't think I made a slide for any of that because, again, I was trying to keep things brief. But you see the how extensive my work has been. I have given two major important talks that are YouTube videos about the occult symbology of the 9/11 events. Each one, I think, was approximately maybe an hour and a half. So again, if you want to understand the occult symbology of 9/11, watch those YouTubes. I'm going to briefly talk about some of the numerology involved, because the people who planned the 9/11 event, it was actually a satanic ritual. It was a satanic sacrifice. And if you understand the numerology and all that was done, you see the twin towers here. Those twin towers represent the towers of Jochem and Boaz. And behind it was building 7, which was called the building of Solomon. Yeah, that's what they called it. This whole thing, if you understand occult and the way a Masonic lodge is set up, this whole thing is set up as a satanic lodge system on the macro. And so when they did this ritual, George Bush was down in Florida in a CIA town, a school which had children that were had been subjected to the trauma-based mind control, and he was reading an ode to the goat. And who's the goat? Well, if you understand the occult world, the goat, Baphomet, this is Satan, And the hero of this Ode to the Goat story that he was reading the children, our president was reading the children, is the goat is the hero of the story. And so when 9/11 occurred and they walked into the classroom to tell President Bush that the Twin Towers had been hit, what do you think the President of the United States did when he just heard that two major Twin Towers had collapsed and probably killed thousands of people? What did he do? Do you know? He continued to read the Ode to the Goat to the children. And Bleak and I didn't get up and say, excuse me, a major disaster's happening. Why? Because that Ode to the Goat was part of the satanic ritual that was being done. So here I've taken some of, I've taken some screenshots from my talk, and there you see, I show how the pentagram with the goat is important, and I show that the goat has to be inside the circle, inside the pentagram, in the satanic ritual, and I show these books from the Church of Satan, and here I am showing the Masonic Lodge with the Twin Towers, Joachim and Boaz. And then this is Solomon's temple here, and every Masonic lodge that you go to will have the Twin Towers in the front. And this, what looks like the first floor, is actually the Temple of Solomon, and underneath it will be a basement, and generally they have a third floor too here. So this is actually a temple, although they're just called Masonic Lodge. I know that I'm not going to take time today for you to expose the 9/11 event. A lot of things I say, if you have difficulty with them, put them on a shelf and research them further. But the actual underlying truth behind things, if you look beyond the official story, is that the Twin Towers were not hit by those jets, nor was the Pentagon hit by a plane. There was also supposedly a plane that was flying over Pennsylvania, and it flew into the ground and disappeared without any trace of the plane. It just was swallowed by the ground, that's the official story, and it disappeared. And then there was one other plane involved in this all. And in each of these flights, there was numbers given to the flights that were involved. And all of those numbers have high significance for the meaning of each of those flights. And if you start understanding the numbers, numerology, it's actually, you might even just like get shivers up your back, because then you comprehend how these 3,000 people that were killed in New York, that was a satanic sacrifice. So 5 is actually the number of death for Satanism. The Pentagon was actually, and I go into it in my talk, how there was a lot of a cult's significance and how it was built, where it was built, the site and how it was built, the measurements and everything was all done in a cult methodology. So the Pentagon building, where our military is actually totally a cult. And then the highest general is a 5-star general, which is 555. We have 555. 5 is Satan's number of death. And so 555, if you go 555, which is the highest level of death, what is that? When you do that, you get 125, right? So how many people were killed supposedly on the flight that hit the Pentagon? Well, it was 5 to the 3rd power, 555. Which means the highest level of, and the Pentagon had an airplane flying that was their traffic control plane, and that the sign for that plane was Venus 77, which means Lucifer. In other words, Lucifer's flying over the scene, controlling. Of course, this control plane did not vector in any jets to protect the Pentagon. And a security camera across the street actually picked up that it was a guided missile that hit the Pentagon, not the plane that left no trace of the plane. So anyway, the flight that supposedly hit the Pentagon was 77, which is the number that, if you look in satanic books, you'll find 77 represents, that means the goat of Mendes, the goat of Mendes being what we call Satan. And so what's interesting is for the occult ritual to take place inside the pentagram, right? The Pentagon forms a pentagram. Inside the pentagram, what must step in? The goat. So 77, flight 77, went into the pentagram. The goat went into the pentagram. It's all an occult ritual. Flight 11, there were two flights that supposedly hit the Twin Towers. One was flight 11, and one was flight 175. Both of those numbers are occult numbers, meaning a high-level ritual. The 11 means the magic of a satanic operation, and 175 is an invocation to the satanic deity. So those numbers have significance. And then, if you were to get into Satanism, you would find out that 93 is a number that they put on their letters, meaning a message is being sent. So flight 93, that was the one that was flying over Pennsylvania. And what was the message? The message of that flight, supposedly, that the passengers fought with this hijacker, and when they were saying that, somebody got on their cell phone and called the ground while they were fighting with the hijacker, "Let's roll." And so then President Bush says that those brave citizens fighting on that plane against the hijacker, and then what they heard over the cell phone supposedly, "Let's roll." He said that will be our battle cry for attacking Iraq. So on the jets and the tanks and all kinds of military paraphernalia, the battle cry of 9/11 was "Let's roll." So flight 93 was used as a satanic message. "Let's roll." It was used in the Iraq shock and awe. And so I don't have all the flights here. There were two other flights that were involved that also had satanic numbers that matched. But I give you a little bit of an idea of how these things come together. This is a House of Temple in Washington, D.C., used for both Masonic and Illuminati rituals. This is a friend of mine, Damian Chapa, who's been in Bavaria the last few months, working to see if he can uncover ancient Illuminati documents from the Bavarian Illuminati. These have not seen the light of day before. So we continue to gain more information on them. And now I'm going to discuss the great plans of the Order of the Quest. And here I've just summarized them. And I'm going to just go over this more in encapsulated form rather than giving lots of details. But the goal of the New World Order actually resembles what we read in the Bible's prophecy. One world government, one world leader, one world religion, one world currency. And from working with people that were under the Illuminati trauma-based mind control and getting down to a certain level, you will discover Armageddon programming. In other words, to encapsulate it in just a few words, the Illuminati plan to do the plagues of revelations that these four horsemen bring to the earth, famine, war, and so forth. And so above that, I wrote, compose your own terms, or have terms imposed upon you by life. That was my message earlier, just a few minutes ago, right? You have to take power of your life. If you don't take power of your life, these four horsemen are going to. And this I had already had in my slideshow, because I actually got this off a billboard in China. But when I landed at the Prague, the Havel Airport, just as I got off, this same picture was there. So as we speak right now, the US dollar is in the process of being crashed. And they've already made decisions in many meetings to elevate the Chinese currency. And so I'm very grateful to be able to come to Europe as the economic house is falling in. World War III, just briefly, maybe one thing that you hadn't thought about World War III is that there are many satellites, space has been weaponized, and I won't go into the details of how space has been weaponized. The United States up to now has had the superiority in space. And so even though the United States might be weak in terms of infantry, obviously Red China has the United States vastly outnumbered in terms of infantry. In some of the high-tech areas, like weapons in space, United States still dominates. And so World War III has been planned in detail for over a century. And I've been watching how they have been pulling it together. I thought that they were going to bring it off earlier, but I think that they had to postpone it. But it's still apparently on the agenda. And there we see the head of the IMF in the upper right. And that's really symbolic of what the IMF feels towards us and many of the countries that they have taken over. And the IMF will, in my estimation, take over the United States and control our economy when our economy crashes. Monsanto is an Illuminati company. And as I wrote there, either mankind stops Monsanto, or Monsanto stops mankind. That's a whole subject that could be the topic of many discussions, what Monsanto is doing. And on the one hand, you have countries like the United States where people have plenty of money still up to this time to buy food. And so they are being conditioned by the advertising and so forth to buy junk food. And so you see over here on the left-hand side that even though they're overfed, they're undernourished. And so we have many, many children in America that are suffering from all kinds of diseases, for instance, diabetes, very early on in age. We have a terrific health problem in the United States. And when I talked to some of these Illuminati kingpins, they actually laughed to me that they're culling the herd. This is part of their population control. If you're so stupid as to eat this unhealthy food, you deserve to die. So So there you have it. So if you want to stand up for liberty, you want to stand up for freedom, for human rights, take care of your health, people. This is another big part of their agenda. We already have had some, they're not fully human. They're hybrids, they've been amongst us. And some of you out there are already familiar with these giant heads here. And those have been found all over the world. And there has been a concerted effort to destroy the bones of giants that have been found. Like the Smithsonian Institute has covered up the bones that were shipped to it of giants. Why? Because it goes back to something that the scriptures talk about. It talks about the fallen angels coming down with mankind, and they created a race of giants, Nephilim, which were all over the world. And so this is significant because it brings something out that I want to say. The Word of God says sin is all over. So see, this problem that we're dealing with is global. It's sin, it's fallen humankind. And so to think that it's one race, or to think that one group of people has come and they have created the problem, no. The hierarchy, the elite bloodlines, in general, they have been centered, and I have traced their genealogies and their movements. But we're talking about a universal problem. And there are portals around the world. And this is a whole discussion here about portals, how these entities work, and how they've interacted in the, how they interacted with many cultures. Down here is Sasquatch or Bigfoot. In Nepal, where I grew up, they were called Yetis. And it was the very first subject that I studied when I was a young boy, because I went with my father on the trail to Mount Everest. I didn't climb Mount Everest, I just got to where the snow mountains were. But they had the stories of the Yeti there, and Sir Edmund Hillary, who was the first white person to have climbed Mount Everest. He was interested in looking for evidence of the Yeti. And so at a very early age, I was already researching one topic of this whole vast thing. And this touches, as you'll notice, the Yeti has a conical, high-shaped head. But there's something very strange about this. And so this picture here, there were two Americans that were out hunting that had film camera, and they took film of a Bigfoot. It was the Patterson-Gimlin film. And people, experts with film, said that it wasn't fake, it had to be real. And they showed that when I was an early teenager in the American theaters. And I was excited because I had been researching the Abominable Snowman, the Yeti, the Bigfoot. I had been researching this for years. So I was excited that this film was going to be shown in the public. So I was expecting that there would be some interest by our government and the universities to research this. There was no interest. Zero. It was chilling. There was, at that very time, we were spending billions on a program called Cyclops SETI to look for life in outer space. And here this comes along and they wouldn't even show any interest. It showed me that this whole thing is a government secret. And I stopped researching it at that time. And when you get close to like Bigfoot in Oregon, because there are certain spots that you can go where they're going to appear. Spots that are oftentimes around hidden UFO bases, which the UFO bases that we have in Oregon have been closed. But anyway, I have a friend who was also into Bigfoot research, and he got very close to them. I mean, you can smell and you can hear them. So he was very close to a Bigfoot. Men in black showed up, and they intimidated him, the men in black, so much he stopped his research from then. So that's a whole, there's lots of subjects here that are secret, but they relate to the plans. Basically, maybe to sum up, the elite have kind of bragged to me that at some point in the future, these archons, or what we might call fallen angels, they're going to be given control of the earth. So, to rephrase it, the Illuminati, the humans of the Illuminati that are working with them, are really traitors to the human race, because this whole agenda is anti-human. And how bad has it gotten in America? You know, for many years after I was released from prison, I would not talk about it, because there's some very mean, nasty people in prison, and I never knew whether they would throw me in prison again. And so I wouldn't talk about the conditions, but now it's getting to the stage that I will feel openly comfortable with talking more about it. The situation is so bad, and you are not going to hear this in the mainstream press. The situation is so bad now, it's not comprehensively bad, but there are spots in the United States where the situation is just as bad as the Nazi concentration camps. And I'm going to show you one right here. This is in downtown Chicago. This is Harmon Prison. It is a secret prison in downtown Chicago. And the police in Chicago, they grab people off the street that they want. And about 9,000 people have disappeared into this building and have never appeared again. We know from a few people that have gotten out of it that they oftentimes torture people to death. The people that they grab off of the street, there are no records kept. There are no records kept of these arrests. They are taken. I know where in the building they have their, they torture the people, and these people most of them never come back. And that's how bad it is in the United States. And down here are FEMA camps, prison camps. Since 1990, I have been exposing that we have hundreds of concentration camps that are sitting empty. I exposed the company Gunderson in Portland. They were one of the companies that was involved in building the rail cars that are designed to haul prisoners to these camps. And they have the shackles on the walls and the places for guards. So it's all in place. All that has to happen is for someone to give the order. And many people like me, you can imagine. So, now let's return to the positive side. There's power in the moral high ground. I can tell many stories about someone having the moral high ground and how someone who's defending the lie, someone who's defending what is wrong, has no strength compared to moral high ground. And there's a force for good all over the world. The fact that there's a force for good can be evidence that I'm standing here before you. These are all people that had incredible world system against them, and showed us through their actions that we can stand for good. Everything we do is a choice between life and death. This is Deuteronomy 30:19. I have set before you life and death, therefore choose life. That's the ancient wisdom. Be the change you want to see in the world. Redeem the time, because these days are evil. I'm so grateful to be here. You know, no matter how bad it gets, it's better to be active, working against it, than just passive. Because if you're doing something, it's much easier to deal with it. Okay, thank you.